Through our study through the book Pilgrim's Progress, we have come to the portion of the book which deals with Christian's encounter with Mr. Worldly Wise Man. Several characters have come before us already. We've seen our hero, which is the pilgrim, and we've seen two false pilgrims who would be pilgrims but proved to be false. Their names were Obstinate, which was stood for stubborn, one who wanted nothing to do with the gospel, made no bones about it. And the other individual was a man named Pliable, who was persuaded when he heard of some of the pleasures of heaven that perhaps it'd be a good thing that he left the city of destruction and try to go to heaven. But then when we found that he fell into what we discussed last week was the slough of despond, that he decided that this thing of the Christian life was not for him, so he jumped out or got himself out of the slough and went back to the city of destruction. Now, tonight we're going to deal with Christian's encounter with Mr. Worldly Wise Man. After the pilgrim or the Christian gets out of the slough, he was pointed out by the man named Help that there were steps in which he could go through this slough, then we progress to this point. Now, this evening's study will be concentrating upon the second fatal error that keeps a person away from truly being saved or truly being converted. We had told you last week that from the time a person becomes interested in their present condition, that they do realize somewhat that they are under the wrath of God, until they actually reach true conversion, which is the wicket gate in our study, that there are two fatal errors in which a person can fall into. One of them is the slough of despond. And this is the error that some fall into when they hold that sin is so powerful and strong that there's no hope of them being forgiven or delivered out of its power. Now today, we do not encounter many individuals like this. Once in a while, you run across a person who has fallen into the slough of despondency. But there is a reason for this. Years ago, many, many people fell into this error. But it was because years ago sin was preached on. That is, it was exposed the hideous nature of sin, and people became concerned about it. Nowadays, in our modern gospel, we have what is known as easy believers, and which looks upon sin very lightly. And so you don't find too many people becoming overly alarmed today about their sinful condition to the point that they become despairing of ever being forgiven. But there is another error which we're going to discuss tonight, which is as fatal as the slough of despond, and actually destroys more pilgrims than the slough of despond, and that is the encounter with Mr. Worldly Wise Man. The slough of despond and Mr. Worldly Wise Man, remember, are the two errors which a person must get through before they actually reach true conversion. One of them, viewing sin too despairingly. And Mr. Worldly Wise Man is the other error which views sin too lightly. It takes it as if sin is nothing anymore. You don't have to deal with it. So if you have your books, open them there to that portion in which that we deal with Christian and Mr. Worldly Wise Man. We read this paragraph. Now as Christian was walking solitarily by himself. Now that's a phrase that's filled with meaning. What does it mean when he walks solitarily by himself? That's a play on words that Bunyan uses, and it means that he's lonely. That this individual is now overcome with loneliness. Now why? Remember, he's not yet converted. He does not understand what it means to be truly converted and have his faith placed in Jesus Christ and His work. And up to this point, He has no Christian company apart from the local pastor, the evangelist. So now after Pliable, the would-be pilgrim has turned around and gone back to the city of destruction. This Christian, or this would-be Christian, is now walking alone all by himself. And he's overcome with loneliness. And this is a very tempting time for Mr. Worldly Wise Man to come on the scene. All right, we read on. As he was walking solitarily by himself, he espied one afar off come crossing over the field to meet him, and their hap was to meet just as they were crossing the way of each other. The gentleman's name that met him was Mr. Worldly Wise Man, and he dwelt in the town of Carnal Policy, a very great town, and also hard by or close by from whence Christian came. Remember, Christian came from the town named the City of Destruction. So this man didn't live in the City of Destruction, but he lived in another town right close by it. And this man then, meeting with Christian and having some inkling of him, for Christian, setting forth from the City of Destruction, was much noised abroad, not only in the town where he dwelt, but also it began to be the town talk in some other places. That is, some other people had heard about this person seeking the Lord. And so it was getting out in other localities. Mr. Worldly Wise Man, therefore, having some guess of him, by beholding his laborious going, by observing his sighs and groans and the like, began thus to enter into some talk with Christian. Now here we have Christian's encounter with Mr. Worldly Wise Man. Who is Mr. Worldly Wise Man, and what does he stand for? Mr. Worldly Wise Man stands for a liberal preacher. That is, he is a minister who is not converted, but yet he goes under the ranks of a Christian minister. And what dominates his message is fleshly or human wisdom. He does not use the wisdom which is from above. He does not discern things spiritually because he's not regenerate. He's not a true Christian himself. But yet he carries a very great portion of weight in the community in which he lives. And that's why this book is so up to date. It's not something that's being talked about that has nothing to do with today. It's very up to date. And so Bunyan in his day would liken this individual who would be the pastor or perhaps the bishop in the established church. Foreign, stranger to grace, but yet holding a very large influence over the souls of people. Now this individual, Mr. Worldly Wise Man, lived in the town of Carnal Policy. The word carnal means fleshly. It's a word that we no longer use today. It is used in the King James Version of the Bible, but in the Revised Standard Version and in some of the newer translations, it is not found. And it is what we use today for the term flesh. It merely means that this individual is a minister of social standing in the community, and yet he has no spirituality as far as understanding the things of God. And he is dependent entirely upon fleshly or human reasoning in order to explain God and the approach to God. Now, as this man is walking across the field, he sees Christian. That is, he observes the man who's trying to learn about God and what it means to be truly converted. And so as they meet together, then they enter into a conversation. Now before we get into the conversation, I'd like to reveal some things for us to look for in the character of Mr. Worldly Wise Man or the liberal minister who is unconverted. He's going to have some things about him. Now remember, he stands for a fatal error. And that error is he views sin too lightly. He just passes by sin. He doesn't have any use for the cross, any use for the gospel, and he quickly tries to get Christian to get off of the way and to go over to the town of morality. And we'll find out what that is in just a moment. But this man views that all of those who are truly seeking to have the burden of sin removed from them are deluded, or they're touched in their minds. That is, they're not really all there. And so he tries to help them in that. Now this man, Mr. Worldly Wise Man, is much for religion, as long as you don't get serious about it. And I hope you understand what I mean by that. He makes much of religion as long as you don't take religion seriously. You can be very social and upstanding, but don't get fanatical about religion, because that only leads to despondency, and it leads to mental dis-ease and so forth, and pressures on the mind. Don't get fanatical about your religion. That's the philosophy of Worldly Wise Man. And he views that a proper approach to religion, even the Christian religion, is this. You can have your religion as long as it doesn't cause you to lose the enjoyment of this life, the pleasures of this life, and as long as it doesn't interfere with secular advantage. That is, you can have your religion, but don't start practicing the principles of religion to where that it makes you an honest businessman. That is, you can go right along and be an outstanding person, but if it comes down to where it hinders your business, then don't get fanatical about it. That's his approach. You can have religion, but just don't become fanatical about it. And he's very much opposed to all degrees and kinds of religion which interfere with the individual's secular or worldly interest, that is, their jobs. He would abhor or hate and despise any teaching which would cause a person to lose his peace of mind. And he would also want nothing to do with any religion which would interfere with the individual's outward enjoyment and pursuit of earthly pleasures. So now this is how he judges all religion. Religion is good in its place, but just don't let it interfere with your life. That's his philosophy. And we'll see him as he counsels Christians and tries to persuade him with some degree of success that he is in the wrong church. Now remember, the individual has been counseled by a local pastor, a conservative minister. But now Mr. Worldly Wise Man is the liberal minister who's going to give Christian advice against the conservative minister. Don't waste your time going there. All right, now let's examine this discussion. This is vital, because this dialogue between Christian and Worldly Wise Man deals with the root issue as to what is the true gospel, what is the pure gospel of Jesus Christ. Now here Worldly Wise Man says, "How now?" or "Hello there, good fellow. Whither away after this burdened manner? Why are you so burdened? Why are you stooped so low? And why, what's all this groaning and the sighing that's going on in your life? You look very unhappy." And Christian says, "A burdened manner indeed, as ever I think a poor creature had. And whereas you ask me whither away, I tell you, sir, I'm going to yonder wicket gate before me, for there I am informed I shall be put into a way to be rid of my heavy burden." So Christian says, "I'm going on my way, and I'm going toward the wicket gate in order to get rid of this burden that is upon my back." Now remember, the burden is the sense of sin and being under the wrath of God. Now notice how Worldly Wise Man begins to talk with him. Worldly Wise Man says, "Have you a wife and children?" Now see the slyness already? He says, "Now wait a minute, you look like you're old enough to be married. Don't you have a wife and children?" And Christian says, "Yes, but I'm so laden with this burden that I cannot take that pleasure in them as formerly. Methinks I am as if I had none." He said, "I'm in such a condition now, I still have a wife and children, but I've reached such a burden that I can no longer enjoy them as I once was, to the point that I might as well not have any." And all that troubles Mr. Worldly Wise Man right away. He says, now remember,
He views any religion which interferes with earthly pursuits as being obnoxious and something to be avoided. And so that's why he asked the question about the wife and children. Well, a worldly wise man says, "Will thou hearken to me? I will give you good counsel." The Christian says, "If it be good, I will, for I stand in need of good counsel." Worldly wise man said, "I would advise thee then that thou with all thy speed get rid of thy burden, for thou wilt never be settled in thy mind till then, nor canst thou enjoy the benefits of the blessings which God hath bestowed upon thee till then." Now notice his advice. He's already asking, "Where is your family at?" And Christian has replied. Then worldly wise man says, "Well, here's the first thing you need to do. You need to get rid of this burden that's on your back. That is, you need to get rid of this consciousness of sin. Because you'll never have peace of mind until that is removed, and you won't be able to enjoy God until it's removed." As if you won't be able to enjoy all these earthly things which God has blessed you with as long as you're in this state of mind. For a Christian says, "That is that which I seek for, even to be rid of this heavy burden. But get it off myself I cannot. Nor is there any man in our country that can take it off my shoulders. Therefore am I going this way, as I told you, that I may be rid of my burden." So worldly wise man asked him a question. He says, "Who bid thee go this way to be rid of thy burden?" Now remember, what is the way the Christian on? He's on the way toward the wicket gate and the cross. The worldly wise man said, "Who told you to take this way to get rid of this burden?" And Christian said, "A man appeared to me to be a very great and honorable person. His name, as I remember, is Evangelist. That is, this local conservative pastor over here. He's the one that told me this." And worldly wise man says, "I beshrew him, or I wish him evil for his counsel." He said, "There is not a more dangerous and troublesome way in the world than is that which he hath directed you. And thou shalt find if thou will be ruled by his counsel." So he's beginning to run down now the evangelist. And he's beginning to try to persuade this individual, "You have fallen in contact with one of the most dangerous types of persons. And that is one of those local Bible-believing preachers." And he said, "It's only going to get you into more trouble." And in fact, he says, "Thou hast met with something, as I perceive already, for I see the dirt of the slough of despondence upon you." He said, "I see that you've already fallen into despondency because you've listened to this preacher." And then he says, "But that slough is the beginning of the sorrows that do attend those things that go in that way." He says, if you're going to stay on the way and follow the directions of the evangelist, you're only beginning to get into trouble, because there's going to be a lot more trouble on that way. So he says, "You ought to listen to me." He says, "Hear me, I'm older than thou. Thou art like to meet with in the way whither thou goest wearisomeness, painfulness, hunger, perils, nakedness, swords, lions, dragons, darkness, and in a word, death, and what not, many other things." He said, "These things are certainly true, having been confirmed by many testimonies. And should a man so carelessly cast himself away by giving heed to a stranger?" He said, "I've heard many reports that individuals who set out toward the wicket gate, that all they encounter is trouble." And he says, "I'm older than you." And he says, "I'm wiser than you." And he says, "Listen, if you want to stay out of any further trouble than what you've already fallen into, you stay away from that Bible-believing preacher, because he'll only get you into trouble." And so the Christian begins to succumb to the temptation, because this man is very influential. Remember, this man is not the gangster. He's not the casino man. This is one of the more respected men in the community. And that's usually the case. But usually one of the most respected individuals in a given community of established religion is an unsaved preacher who gives worldly advice. Now Christian says, "Why, sir, This burden upon my back is more terrible to me than all these things which you have mentioned. Nay, methinks I care not what I meet with in the way. If so be, I can also meet with deliverance from my burden. He says, I don't care if there's more trouble. If I can get rid of this sense of sin and have peace, I'm going to go on my way. Well, worldly wise man goes on, and he asks him, he says, well, how did you come to receive this burden? How did this burden get on your back? And Christian says, by reading this book, which I have in my hand. Of course, the book is the Bible. Now, look at worldly wise man's reply. He says, I thought so. I thought so. And it has happened unto thee as unto other weak men, who meddling with things too high for them do suddenly fall into thy distractions, which distractions do not only unman men, as thine I perceive have done thee, but they run them upon desperate ventures to obtain they know not what. The worldly wise man, when he finds out that the Christian got his burden by reading the Bible, he says, I thought so. And he says, here's your problem. You're taking the Bible too seriously. And you're just like other individuals who are weak. And you're dealing with things far beyond what you're able to understand. And he says, the Bible just reduces man to nothing. That is, it takes away his pride and self-respect. And look at you. You've got dirt all over you. You've got a bondage on your back. You've got a depressed mind. Nobody wants to be around you. And he says it's all on account of you taking the Bible too seriously. Now, worldly wise man, he would use the Bible in his ministry. He would take passages out of the Bible and speak on them in certain moral principles. But he is opposed violently to taking the Bible seriously. And so this is what he's against. Now, Christian says, I know what I would obtain. It is ease from my heavy burden. The worldly wise man says, but why wilt thou seek for ease this way, seeing so many dangers attend it? All right, if you are persistent in going on in order to have your burden relieved, why do you want to go on this way when there's so many dangers in that path? He says, especially since, if you will have the patience to listen to me, I could direct thee to the obtaining of what thou desirest without the dangers that thou in this way will run thyself into. Yea, and the remedy is right here at hand. Besides, I will add that instead of those dangers, thou shalt meet with much safety, friendship, and contentment. Now notice his reasoning. He says, listen, I know how you can get rid of this burden without any of the problems that you'll encounter if you persist in going the way that conservative minister told you to go. And he says, besides, it's right here close. You don't have a long journey. It's right here. And instead of meeting with all those dangers and distress of mind and so forth, you'll have much safety, friendship, and you'll be content with what you have. You have a lot of friends. You'll be safe, you'll have security, and you can settle down in contentment. So the Christian says, sir, I perceive. Open this secret to me. So worldly wise man says, why? In yonder village, and you see the sign here? He says, the village is named Morality. There dwells a gentleman whose name is Legality. Now let's look at this village. Now, what does the village or the city of Morality stand for? Now, listen carefully. It stands for the established religion in any given community. That religion which is very social, it has the respect of the community, and yet it's reduced to mere morality. It has nothing to do with the gospel. It has nothing to do with a real examination of true Christian piety, but it's merely a religion of morals. And not morals according to God's Word, but according to the standards of men. I'll read to you here from a book written by Mr. Thomas Scott And he gives some notes on this particular village. So listen carefully as we read his notes on this. The village morality is the emblem of that large company who, in nations favored with revelation, abstain from scandalous vices. Now notice in this village, you're not going to have any drunkards there. All the drunkards are going to be where? In the city of destruction. This is for those people who would come out of heathendom where the vice is open, and they would settle down in morality. That is, they would not become true Christians, but they would settle down in a system of morals. And they would scorn those who live in the city of destruction, but they themselves are just as much under the wrath of God. Let's go on. And practice reputable duties without any true fear or love of God or regard to His authority or glory. This, connected with a system of notions and a stint of external worship, is substituted in the place of Christianity. But it is faulty in its principle, measure, and object. It results wholly from self-love, is restricted to the outward observance of some precepts or standards selected from the Scriptures. Now note that. The village of morality is the established church, and it uses some of the Scriptures, but only those Scriptures which will go along with its principles. And it aims principally at the acquisition of reputation, distinction, and temporal advantages. It is destitute of humility, delight, impartiality, and obedience. It leaves the heart in the possession of some worldly idol and never advances a man to the rank of a spiritual worshiper or renders him meet for the peculiar pleasures of heaven. Yet this mutilated kind of religion draws multitudes off from attending either to the holy requirements of the law or the humbling doctrines of the gospel. Now, I hope you haven't lost me. I hope you understand what this village or the city of morality is. It is distinct from the city of destruction, but it is an established church or system of religion, but yet it is not true Christianity. And so do you see how that a person who steps out to go to the wicket gate can either fall into an error of the slough of despond, or he can settle down in churchanity. He can go to church every Sunday and listen to Mr. Worldly Wise Man preach. And yet he's not converted, but as far as he's concerned, everything's all right. Everything's settled, the burden's gone now, and he has a lot of friends, he has a good reputation, and the church is sort of a social status in the community, that in order to have a good reputation, you should belong to that particular church. And incidentally, whatever the respectable religion is in a community, that will be where Mr. Worldly Wise Man will be at. When I pastored in St. Louis, Missouri, the respectable religion was the Roman Catholic Church. So if you wanted to be a nominal Christian, that is, in name only, you would unite with the Roman Catholic Church. But now, when you move to Southwest Missouri, the area in which we're in, it's another matter entirely. And do you know what the established or the reputable religion of this area is? Yes, you do, don't you? It's Baptist. So, in order to be someone in a good standing in this section of the country, you need to belong to a Baptist church. So it's just as easy to go to hell being a member of a Baptist church as it is being a member of a Catholic church. If you have just settled down in churchanity and have set up a system of morals that you go by and yet are strangers to a true working of the grace of God which leads to genuine conversion. All right, now let's go on. Now this village is called morality. It is the established religion. Now, Mr. Worldly Wise Man says there's a gentleman who lives in this village, and his name is Legality. He says he's a very judicious man, a man of a very good name that has skill to help men off with such burdens as thine is from their shoulders. Yea, to my knowledge, he hath done a great deal of good this way. Aye, and besides, he hath skill to cure those that are somewhat crazed in their wits with their burdens. To him, as I said, thou mayest go and be helped presently. His house is not quite a mile from this place, and if he should not be at home himself, he hath a pretty young man to his son whose name is Civility, that can do it, as well as the old gentleman can. There, I say, thou mayest go to be eased of thy burden, and if thou art not minded to go back to thy former habitation, that is, the city of destruction, as indeed I would not wish thee, thou mayest send for thy wife and children to thee to this village, where there are houses now standing empty, one of which thou mayest have at a reasonable rate. Provision is there also cheap and good, and that which will make thy life the more happy is to be sure that thou shalt live by honest neighbors in credit and good fashion. Now, what is he saying? He's saying, leave the advice of that conservative preacher and come over here to this church. And what you can do by doing this is you can go to a man named Legality. Now, who is Legality? He's one of the preachers in this church. This church has all kinds of preachers. In fact, they have more pastors than they do members. And Legality is the person who all he preaches about is the law. That is, just keep the Ten Commandments, the way the Pharisees did. And Mr. Worldly Wise Man said, if Mr. Legality isn't home, then you hunt up his son, Civility. Now, civility means decency, good manners. And he says, if Mr. Legality can't remove the burden or he isn't there, good manners will. So what is he pointing him to? Instead of going by the way of the cross, you just go by the Ten Commandments and live a good, decent life, and that's all that's necessary. See what he's saying? And so he's giving him advice the way the man of the world would advise him. Now, in this church, Mr. Worldly Wise Man says, and also, you don't have to go back to the city of destruction. In fact, he says, I don't want you to, but you can call for your wife and children. They can come and settle down here with you, too. You can have them. And also, he says, there are many good houses here in this community. What he means, there are empty pews available for you in the established church. In the old established churches of England, you had to purchase a pew. That is, you had to buy your spot. And so what he was saying here is that there are many empty pews in our church. And if you come to our church, you're going to be surrounded by honest neighbors, and you can live with a good reputation and have maintain your self-respect. Now, doesn't that appeal to the flesh? You can be on your way to heaven, you can be right with God, and yes, you can enjoy all the things of the world where you never have to deal with the cross and your own sins. And so, this particular established religion allows one to maintain their self-respect in the eyes of the world. Now, Christian was somewhat out of stand. He didn't know what to do. But presently he concluded, if this be true, which this gentleman hath said, my wisest course is to take his advice, and with that he thus further spake. So now he falls into this error. If we would read in Bunyan's autobiography, he would say that there was a period of time that he went through in which that he felt he was the most righteous man in England. He set out to live by the Ten Commandments, and he said, I had no problem at all. I was one of the most righteous men in all of England. So he's merely saying, this is what I went through with. I left the advice of that conservative pastor, Mr. Gifford, and I went on my way and I began to start practicing morality for a period of time. So Christian says to Worldly Wise Man, sir, which is my way to this honest man's house? How do I get to Mr. Legality's house? And so Worldly Wise Man says, do you see yonder high hill? Do you see that hill? And Christian says, yes, very well, I see it. Worldly Wise Man, by that hill you must go, and the first house you come to is his. Now what is this high hill? It's Mount Sinai. That is, in order to get to the law, you must go by Mount Sinai. And in order to live by the Ten Commandments, you must go past this hill, because just right at the base of this hill is where Mr. Legality lives. Now, see, where did Moses get the Ten Commandments? On Mount Sinai, didn't he? So right at the base of Mount Sinai, you're going to find the Ten Commandments for Mr. Legality. You hunt him up, and you start living by his advice, and you'll have your burden removed. And if perchance he's not home, then you look up his son, decency or civility, and you just live a good, decent life, and everything will be all right. So Christian turned out of the way to go to Mr. Legality's house for help. But behold, when he got hard by the hill, that is, real close to the hill, it seemed so high, and also that side of it was much next to the wayside, did hang over so much that Christian was afraid to venture further, lest the hill should fall on his head. Wherefore there he stood still and knew not what to do. And also his burden now seemed heavier to him than he was when he was in the way. Now notice he's off of the way now. He's taken the shining light. He's left that. And he's no longer on the road that leads to true conversion, the wicket gate, but he's been directed into a false teaching that you can be saved by your good works, by living a decent life, and by just observing the external observances of the Ten Commandments. But instead of finding that everything was going to be peaceful when he got up here to the hill of Mount Sinai, suddenly it seemed that that hill was going to fall right on him. And instead of his burden becoming lighter, it says his burden now seemed heavier to him than while he was in the way. And there came out flashes of fire out of the hill that made Christian afraid that he should be burned. Here, therefore, he did not sweat or quake for fear. And now he began to be sorry that he had taken Mr. Worldly Wise Man's counsel. And with that, he saw Evangelist coming to meet him. Now, let's look what's happened to him now. Now, remember, this is what the Bible would call, or the Puritans would call, an awakened sinner. He is aware of his conscious need of forgiveness. Mr. Worldly Wise Man, he can walk right by the law and not see any of the flames or any of the smoke of God's wrath. Now, do you see the difference? Mr. Worldly Wise Man was not being dealt with by the Spirit of God. Therefore, he could do just like the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul could say before his conversion, as touching the law, he was what? Blameless. The law had nothing to condemn him with. The Apostle, he could look every day at the end of his life and he could read the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. Haven't killed anybody today. Not guilty. Thou shalt not steal. Haven't stolen anything today. Not guilty. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Haven't run off with anybody's wife. Not guilty. And he'd go right down the Ten Commandments and say, I'm not guilty. I'm blameless. Now that's the way Mr. Worldly Wise Man could, because he was not dealt with as Christian was. He did not have the burden on his back, and therefore he could approach the law in a different fashion, but not the awakened sinner. The awakened sinner, when he comes before God's law and he realizes, if I'm going to live by morality, I'm going to be judged by morality. And it's not going to be my standards, it's God's standards, and God's standards are perfect, and I've sinned and come short of those standards. And so he begins to fear even more. He's out of the way. Let me illustrate this in bringing our subject to a close tonight. How many of you, thinking back in the... We have some teachers here this evening. Maybe did this. How many of you back in school days, you were allowed to grade your own papers once in a while in your hand? Huh? Remember that? Do you remember the human nature in that too? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands how many corrected their errors and gave themselves a passing grade when you were permitted to judge your own paper or grade your own papers.
So what's the tendency? I remember when I was given that opportunity back in high school, that if the question was obviously wrong, I'd have to check it. But if it was questionable, that is, it wasn't worded the way the teacher said it ought to be, then I could say and justify, well, that's what I really meant. Correct. See? That is, instead of grading myself by the perfect standard what the teacher gave, I set up what the standard was, and then I marked off, or I graded myself. Now, this is what people do when they settle down and establish religion. Instead of looking at God's standards, God's holy law, and measuring themselves in the light of that, they set their own standards, and when they do fail, they say, well, I really didn't mean to do that. Here's what I really meant to do, and therefore they give themselves a passing grade. And so there's no way that the church member can ever really be made conscious aware of any wrongdoing. Now, do you see that? Because he's grading his own papers. And the test is set up by him, and he grades himself. And this is what the great error of succumbing to the advice of worldly wise men leads one into. It lets them settle down in the established religion with no alive conscience to the gospel and to the law of God. But to the awakened sinner, when he sees that if he is going to attempt to live by the law, immediately James says that he that would keep the law, if he offend in what? One point, he thought, guilty of all. And therefore he sees, I'm guilty. And instead of the law being a very nice thing to live with, it condemns him more and more. And we're going to have to leave our hero here at this point. Settle down, or almost settle down, in established religion, and yet still with this tremendous burden which is upon his back. Now, in our next setting, we'll let evangelists explain what the true nature of Mr. Worldly Wise Man is and how he nearly destroyed Pilgrim's soul. I remember, though, giving this illustration in closing, how many people I have in my ministry influenced to try to seek the Lord. And I'm thinking of some that we've got them to come to church, and they've listened to the advice that was given, seek the cross, forgiveness through Jesus Christ. And then they wouldn't show up for maybe a couple of months, 3 months, and we'd go and call on them and say, we've been missing you in church. Well, yes, we just haven't been coming. Well, why haven't you been coming? Well, we go to another church now. Well, what church do you go to? And I've encountered many of some of the most liberal churches in the communities that don't preach the gospel, don't make any pretense in their song books, and there's a certain major denomination that has done that. They've taken the blood, every reference to the blood, out of their song books, because that's obnoxious to think about the blood and that slaughterhouse religion. So when I've gone and I've talked to these people, while they do just like Christians are going to do when evangelist confronts them, they're going to drop their head and in shame begin to blush a little bit, because they've turned out of the true way, and you can always tell they've fallen under the advice of Mr. Worldly Wise Man. Some person, some relative, or some individual has given them worldly advice. Stay away from those who make too much of religion. All right, now here it is. Two fatal errors which you can fall into that will keep you out of true conversion. What are they? One, looking at sin too seriously to where you despair of ever being forgiven, and the other one is viewing sin too lightly to where sin is nothing more but just a few mistakes. And good, decent living
and the observance of the law of God with all that's necessary to offset for that.